Well, 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 here we are. Did you see the pause there? Unbelievable. Technical incompetence. I won't take the blame for that. Well, I should, but I won't. Now, tonight, yes, it's the 29th of July, and tonight, 6:30 p.m., La Porchetta, for all those folks who listen to the Anarchist World this week, down on the Mornington Peninsula and Frankston. I know you're all left out, but we never forget you. So come along, have a meal, enjoy the company. You're not going to be harangued. So that's tonight. And on the first Wednesday in August, which I think is the 4th, maybe the 5th, it's down at Ringwood. But we'll advertise that next week. And then it's Brunswick the week after. It just goes on and on. Meal after meal. No wonder I can't lose weight. Now, exciting times? Don't think so. Now, T-shirts. Remember we did 100 T-shirts so that we could pay our way here at 3CR. And this isn't about the radiophone. This is about studio fees, you know. Costs about $150 every week to broadcast the Anarchist World this week. And we've fallen on hard times. So what we decided to do was make some T-shirts. 160 have gone, 40 are left. So if you're interested, have a look at the Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. You can see what they're like. You can always email us or you can leave a message on 0439 395 489. If you're down in the Frankston region, well, I'll have some there this evening. How's that for self-promotion? Now, the sacred cows have wandered in and they're very unhappy about what's happening in India currently. They're unhappy that cockroaches are now more important than sacred cows, but we'll talk about that during the program. That cockroach jaunter party seems to be getting off the ground. So, what else have we got prepared for you? Well, there's other things out there, hundreds of other things. Now, if you have pledged to the 3CR Radiophone and for some reason you haven't paid your pledge, now's the time to pay. And if you had paid and you haven't got a receipt, you can always ring up on 9419 8377 and find out whether it's in the mail or in the email or in the cloud. So there's lots of things happening around. Winter seems to be a quiet time, but it doesn't need to be a quiet time. Fascinating period in Victorian history. We'll talk about that during the program. And we may even talk about avian flu. Why not? But the first part of the program is going to be a little bit heavy. I'm going to try to be an intellectual, look at some things. So if you're not into heavy stuff, I suggest you switch off and switch on halfway during the program. Now, the sacred cows have put up protest signs. They're saying, cockroaches out, sacred cows in. Well, what can we do? What can we do here at 3CR? Now, remember, there's plenty of other programs. Radical Australia, I host that at 4 to 5 every Wednesday. We speak to interesting people, sometimes boring people, but that's the reality, that's life. You know, there's all types of people. Here we are, the satellite is upon us, the sacred cows have left. We will be blasting into the atmosphere in the next second.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week. Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Welcome to the Anarchist World this week. broadcast from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscana, and I'm hosting today's program. You wonder what anarchism is all about? Anarchos without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the fate of billions of people on the planet? Inequalities in power and wealth. What have we seen during the neoliberal revolution? Concentration of power and wealth in fewer and fewer hands. That makes the anarchist struggle exceptionally important, because the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve power or share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Pathetic ideas, really, aren't they? Use wealth in common for the common good. Don't let billionaires control your life. Don't let dictators, whether they're appointed, self-appointed, hereditary, or elected, control your life. Only losers would think that, wouldn't they? That's why they call us losers, isn't it? Because we believe that people have the capacity and the ability and the desire to control their own lives and make the decisions regarding things around them, which determine what type of lives they live. And it's interesting that in periods of human history, we see periods where people have taken the bull by the horn and have, I should say the horns, it wasn't a one-horned bull, by the horns, and have the and have actually made tremendous progress. It's fascinating, isn't it, that in the 21st century, the century of instantaneous communication, where we've never been so interconnected through virtual platforms, that we've lost so much. And today I'd like to talk about the rapid technological transition that each and every one of us is going through, whether we like it or not. And I'd also like to talk about the social dislocation it causes and the de-skilling of society. Now, I was fascinated, I think a day or two ago, when I heard the word cognitive surrender. I'm thinking, well, that's an interesting word, cognitive surrender. So I thought we'd go back in history. When writing was first developed, what we saw was the ability of human experience and human history to be quantified and to be accessible to an increasing number of people. Although Socrates refused to learn to read and write because he believed that it impinged his memory and his capacity to think, the fact is that what writing did is it removed power from the elders who had that power because of the experiences they had seen and the experiences they had gone through in terms of their lives, and they could use those experiences to actually deal with issues which came up in their particular communities. But once it was all written down, the elders basically became old people, and we'll talk about that later on. Then you had the calculator. I'm sure you'll all remember the calculator, when the concept of you learning mathematical tables was really a waste of time. And now we have AI, artificial intelligence. And it's interesting that I've been looking at some research in this, especially in the tertiary sector and the effect it's had on the tertiary sector. And one paper said that approximately 80% of all assignments that are put in for assessment are basically AI generated. This is in our technical sector. So cognitive surrender is when we surrender our ability to think logically to a non-human source outside of our own little brain. And the fact is, cognitive surrender is becoming more and more and more of the human condition, where what we see is, although we're interconnected technologically, the ability to generate new thinking, to generate new thought, the ability to logically address issues goes out the door. No wonder so many people don't believe there's a climate emergency, or so many people believe that COVID doesn't exist, Well, so many people believe that vaccination is such a terrible, terrible thing. What this cognitive surrender, what it does, especially in the technological sector, what it does is it actually gives algorithms the ability to determine the future of billions of people. We see this in warfare, where the concept of cognitive surrender has become more and more pronounced as different nation states or different actors involved in warfare turn to AI-generated technology, which has minimal human oversight, to conduct their murderous little adventures. So I'm a great believer in the fact that as human beings, we are the only species on Earth that has the ability to come to logical conclusions regarding different issues and to surrender, and it is surrender, that ability which we have developed over tens of thousands of years in order to survive on planet Earth, to an artificial entity whose algorithms are determined by human beings, other human beings, whose prejudices are incorporated in those algorithms, only means disaster. Not just in terms of de-skilling the population, but disaster in terms of actually being able to generate new thinking in terms of ensuring the survival of the human race. But the interesting thing about rapid technological transition is that it tends to affect people's wages, their pay packet. And every time we see a rapid technological transition, we have seen radical change. Although the beginning of the Industrial Revolution was a period of abject poverty and abject exploitation, the fact is that that poverty and exploitation led to the development and creation of social and revolutionary movements, which had a profound impact on the way ordinary people were able to have an impact on those that made the decisions for them. Turning the clock forwards to the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, we find ourselves in a similar situation. We are seeing more and more wealth and power being concentrated in a minuscule number of hands. We are seeing that wealth and power being used not to improve the lot of humanity, but to improve the bottom line and the ability to control of that minuscule shrinking minority. As we enter AI, and as AI displaces, that's right, displaces people from work, the problem arises that an increasing number of people who've got mortgages, who pay rent, will find themselves in a very difficult position. And it's that transition. It's that transition when living standards drop, when this is the period when reform occurs. And I think, not believe, think that this rapid technological transition will lead to major social instability, major breaks in cohesiveness in society, and possibly may lead to the development of a new type of society which is based on satisfying human needs, not creating profit irrespective of the human social and environmental cost. Think about it. Cognitive surrender. Are you going to surrender your cerebral sulci and all those synapses to an artificially created entity whose algorithms have been developed to ensure that those in power continue to dominate you and me and the majority of people, not just on this country, but on planet Earth. And that was the dilemma in the past. The kings and the queens had divine right to rule. Their divine right to rule didn't create an egalitarian community. It was those people who were sacrificed on their altar of reform and revolution, which led to the improvement of the lives of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people on this planet. And we face the same challenges today as they faced during the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in the early 19th century. In the early 21st century, we are seeing rapid technological transitions which have not been created to improve human life, to improve our ability to survive on a planet which is facing many, many challenges, most of our own making. So we are now in a period where we will see more dislocation. We will see a breakdown in any social cohesiveness that's occurred. We will see more and more people forced to take direct action in order to survive. So we are entering a particularly unstable period. And unfortunately, governments have lost the ability to govern for all. Because what we have seen is increasing gaps in income, gaps in ability to make decisions. What we have seen is a minuscule minority dominate every aspect of our existence. Let's move on. So, remember the word, cognitive surrender. You're going to surrender to an artificial entity whose algorithms have been created by a human being in order to continue to exploit you, your family, your friends, your workmates. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia. My name's Joseph Toscano. Social dislocation. It's always interesting to keep your eye on research about what's actually happening in society today, not just what happened a few hundred years ago. And recent research has shown that social dislocation in Australia is felt mostly by 18 to 25-year-olds. Now, 18 to 25-year-olds are the children of the virtual revolution. They're the children of rapid technological transition. They're the children who've been told you can be whatever you like as long as you work hard. What a lot of garbage. One in four of Australians between the ages of 18 and 25 experience significant loneliness, not because they're not digitally intertwined, obviously they're digitally intertwined, but because of lack of human contact outside the digital arena. And loneliness leads to its own problems, as we spoke about yesterday, increasing anxiety, reactive depression, and the list goes on and on, early death from preventable diseases. So we've now find ourselves in a situation where we are not only socially dislocated, living in our little individual silos, feeding on the same garbage on a day-to-day basis, but we find ourselves in a situation where we've become little more than cogs in a machine where we've been asked to surrender our ability to think to artificial intelligence, to algorithms. That's right, algorithms, which have been created by the human beings, incorporated into technological innovations to ensure that the powerful remain powerful and the rich remain rich, while we tear at each other, blaming the other for the situation we find ourselves in. Now, people say, don't you get depressed, Joe? I said, nope. I don't get depressed about the situation. Every cloud has a silver lining. And the silver lining is, as we go through this rapid technological transition, we are going to see more and more and more people fall by the wayside. We are going to see the marginalised, not just in terms of wealth but in terms and power, but in terms of interaction with other human beings, become greater and greater in numbers. And this is what will create significant change in the near future. Not divided nation, not the Labor Party or what's left of it, not the Liberal Party, not the National Party, not the Greens, but the fact that this rapid technological transition is causing so much pain and suffering in society. We were promised everything and we've got nothing. Let's move on. Another little concept, convenience versus control, all right? Now, it is very convenient for us as individuals to be seduced by technological innovations. Just go into any supermarket and you'll see people self-checking. And the reason people self-check is the supermarket is arranged in such a way that the number of outlets where people can have their groceries checked by a human being are drastically reduced, and in some situations there are none. So what we see is people putting convenience above their ability to control the situation. And that's what rapid technological innovation does in transition. What it does is it offers us convenience, but at what price? The price of having your banking details hacked. The price of having your most intimate and personal details shared for a buck. I mean, the latest technological innovation is quite fascinating. Now, I understand that the AFL, that's the Australian Football League, is toying with the idea of using facial recognition technology to entice people waiting to get into the grandstands, to entice them to use a little bit more convenient route and rapid route to get to their seats, right? Facial recognition technology. And you've got two aisles in one or two of the AFL clubs, and you'll see more and more of this in the next few years. One, for those who have a paper ticket or the details on their phone, and those who are willing to walk through facial recognition technology. Now, it's very convenient, but what you do is you lose control of the ability to determine who uses and who doesn't use your face. Because once that occurs, it's a little bit like using an app. Once that occurs, you will be able to be legally exploited by these entities who will know what you buy, how much you pay, how often you go to the football. It may seem nothing, but when you join the dots in virtual media, that convenience, that real convenience, it is a real convenience in terms of time, means that you lose control of your personal affairs. Think about it. Is the convenience worth you losing control of your personal affairs? I mean, certain things you'd like to do anonymously. I'm not talking about legal things, like simple transactions between human beings, financial transactions. I mean, there's a push to remove cash because it's inconvenient. And that's the key, inconvenient for businesses. But cash gives you that anonymity. You're not going to get bombarded by companies trying to sell you this and that because they know the patterns of your expenditure. So this digital age, this rapid technological transition we're going through, is not all it's cracked up to be. Ultimately, it's about maximising profits at your expense. You become the product. Every little bit of information about you, including your facial details, become private property, which is bought and sold in the marketplace. And all this not to improve communication, not to improve the standard of living, not to improve mental health indexes, but to maximise profits for a shrinking number of corporations. So when you're offered that convenient alternative, look at the cost, because there is a cost and there will always be a cost while these virtual platforms are in the hands of a minuscule, powerful minority. Listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. Let's move on to a little bit more conventional politics. H5 avian flu pandemic in Australia. Now, over the last few weeks, initially we saw a number of migratory birds die on the shores of this country. And over the last 24 to 48 hours, there is a belief that avian flu is now beginning, the key word is beginning, to infect local birds. Now, avian flu isn't a joke. It's a very serious pandemic, not because of its effect on human beings, which are minimal, because of minimal crossover, but its effect on many, many animals outside the bird kingdom. I'm sure you've seen pictures of all those walruses and seals around the place that have died as a result of the avian flu. And the thing about a pandemic is the fact there is no natural resistance. It's a little bit like when colonisers first appeared here on this continent. The local indigenous people did not have antibodies for measles, smallpox, mumps, all diseases which were not present on this continent. And most of the destruction, First Nations people, was caused through disease. Years before the colonisers throughout Aboriginal people from their lands, large proportions had died because of communal diseases which had been brought to Australia. So it's the same with bird flu. Fortunately, with the avian flu, that's bird flu, fortunately, it seems that the crossover between human beings and birds and animals which are infected is minimal, which means it's highly unlikely there'll be some type of pandemic amongst the human population. But it is going to have a serious effect on agriculture. That's right, agriculture in this country, especially in the poultry industry, possibly on the cattle industry, and the list goes on and on. So all I'm saying is, this is not just an isolated incident. As more and more human beings take over territory, which is being used by, you know, animals, birds, for thousands of years, the possibility of an infection jumping the human-animal barrier increases exponentially. And although the world hasn't seen any major pandemic since the influenza pandemic in 1919 and the COVID pandemic a few years ago, the fact is, irrespective of how smart our scientists are, the fact is that we are on a collision course with a major pandemic within the next decade. But we can do something about it. We can stop intruding on what's left of the wild on this planet. There's not very much left, but there is enough left to maintain that animal diversity, which is so necessary to maintain life on Earth as we know it. Sounds like a bit of gloom and doom today, doesn't it? In the Anarchist World this week, gloom and doom. As I said, it's just a challenge. That's all it is. It's a challenge. And ultimately, you either surrender or you fight back. You surrender or fight back. It's easier to surrender. It's difficult to fight back. But if you don't fight back, you lose. Let's move on. Victoria. Much ado about very little question mark. Now, those of you who live in the state of Victoria or listening to this program will understand that over the last 24 to 48 hours, there's been a kerfuffle and a change of premier. And the new premier has launched this and that and this and that. But I was very interested in the fact the new premier will be launching a royal commission into the construction industry. Now, remember that. A royal commission into the construction industry. Not a royal commission to the CFMEU. Now, those of you who are old enough to remember the royal commission into the notorious painters and dockers will remember that it lasted for 3 to 4 years and its tentacles went everywhere. And at the end of the royal commission into the painters and dockers, the corporate sector, which were doing much of the financing of the what was happening with the renegade painters and dockers, got tarred with the same brush. And the painters and dockers look like good people, good boys and girls, in comparison to the corporate sector, which had created the conditions which allowed that type of activity to flourish. Now, I can assure you, we're going to see the same thing happen in the construction industry. The former Victorian Premier's inability to call a royal commission is not centred about allegations regarding the CFMEU, and obviously some are true and some aren't, although there's been minimal court cases to date. The fact is that for many decades, the construction sector, not just in Victoria, but the rest of Australia, has been plagued by corrupt practices, which are not just an issue for the construction division of the CFMEU, but an issue for all those corporations which dominate construction, not just in Victoria, but the rest of Australia. So I'm very pleased there will be a royal commission, and hopefully the terms of reference will be as wide as possible. And I'm sure the current Premier is well aware that allegations about corruption go far beyond the construction division of the CFMEU. Far, far, far beyond. And let's enjoy the information which is leaked out from the Royal Commission, which is gleaned from the Royal Commission, regarding all those saints, all those wonderful people involved in the construction industry, who finance the construction industry, who will be found to be up to their neck in corrupt behaviour. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Remember when the Indian Prime Minister was here, I think a week or two ago. He was lauded as some type of god by the Indian community while in Victoria. Well, it's interesting. If you look at history in the last 24 months, in Bangladesh, a student revolution which led to the death of over 300 students resulted in deposing a dictator, a so-called democratic dictator, from power, and she then fled to India for political asylum and continues to reside in India, although Bangladesh has been calling for her extradition back to Bangladesh to face criminal charges. To the north of India, that's on the east of India, to the north of India, you have Nepal. And over the last 6 months, 6 to 9 months, we again have seen a young people's revolution which saw the old government and opposition driven out of office and a whole new set of younger people elected to office in Nepal to try, and the key word is to try, to turn back the wave and the stench of corruption, which was such an integral part of life in Bangladesh and Nepal. Now, the Indian Prime Minister has had a dream run over the last decade or so, and that dream run has been based on the concept of promoting Hindu nationalism as a political force in that country, as the major political force in that country. This hasn't just marginalised people of different religious affiliations, whether they're Christians or Muslims, but what it has done, it has, to a significant degree, alienated an increasing number of young people in India. Now, India has a relatively good education sector, and there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of young Indians who have gone through universities and technical colleges who are now unemployable in that country. And as I keep saying, if you lose the ability to earn an income in a capitalist-driven society, you create the conditions for a social or political revolution. So we have, what we saw was the education minister, who's no longer the education minister, calling these disaffected young people who are really angry about the way the examination system had been manipulated to allow a minuscule minority the ability to get into the various important courses around India. And obviously there are a number of suicides related to it. And what we saw was the rise of a young people's movement in India. And like people calling themselves queer, they call themselves cockroaches. And why do they call themselves cockroaches? Because the previous Indian education minister called all these unemployed young people cockroaches. So not only did they take direct action, and we spoke about this last week, and began to organise mass protests, what happened is they formed a new political party, the Cockroach Junta Party, which was beginning to have an impact on the Hindu nationalist rhetoric, which has been the bread and butter of the current government, which through a divide and rule policies has been able to rule India in a more authoritarian way than previously. What was interesting about listening to a lot of these young people involved in the protest, they were not just involved in the protest for their own personal gain. They were involved in the protest because they were talking about corruption, the inability of ordinary people to get ahead in India. The fact is that there was a more authoritarian government and it was difficult to speak out. So obviously the Indian Prime Minister is not a nut. You know, he's a smart cookie. You need to be a smart cookie to be the leader of 1.4 billion people and keep in power for over a decade. And he saw the writing on the wall. He saw what happened to the north in Nepal, which borders India. He saw what happened in the east with Bangladesh, which borders India. And guess what? He fired the education minister in order to defuse the situation. And he's also called an inquiry into the exam system in the tertiary sector in India. Whether this is enough to placate the increasing number of Indian students who can't get a job is a matter for debate. And when you look at the situation in Australia, there are some really interesting parallels. Unless you have parents or guardians with deep pockets, everybody who attends a university and does some technical courses comes out of that course with a hex debt, which can take years, if not decades, to pay. And the dilemma is, many of the courses which have been offered by universities, which are nothing more than privatised education centres, although they may be partially financed by the federal government, even the Bluestone universities, the fact is that many of these degrees which people have paid thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars for, are useless. So you spend 3 or 4 years of your life doing a degree, come out with a hex debt, and then find the degree is useless as far as employment possibilities are concerned. Then you find that because you've got a hex debt, you can't get a mortgage, and you have to rent at ridiculous prices. And then when you start work at the bottom of the pile, in a job which you're overqualified for, the return is minimal. So obviously, the same forces that were at play in India are at play in Australia. The only saving grace is that most people have been absorbed into the economy. Unlike India, where an increasing number of young people were not able to be absorbed in the economy. But if unemployment rates increase, and most likely they increase, if interest rates increase, we may find ourselves in a similar situation as people found themselves in Nepal and Bangladesh and India, where young people are not willing to put up with a future, with a lifestyle that has no future. So let's see what happens. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. You can leave messages at 0439 395 489. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. Public interest before corporate interest, pibci.net. You can actually join right now, pibci.net. Have a look at their webpage. I'm a secretary for public interest before corporate interests. Have a look at their webpage, see what you think and join. Because we are now living in interesting times. And why are we living in interesting times? Because the political dynamic, which had been fashioned and created to ensure two political parties, took it in turn to govern at the state and federal level, are now being challenged. And they're not being challenged by people like you and me, who have been spectacularly unsuccessful in fomenting a bit of revolt in the community, who've been spectacularly unsuccessful in analysing reality and pointing out the increasing inequalities that have occurred in our society are not due to migration. They're not due to refugees. They're not due to people who were born overseas, whose children were, you know, whose parents were born overseas. Not due to a person's skin colour. But they're due to the fact the neoliberal revolution, which revolved around four concepts, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation and deregulation, have been a total 100% failure as far as the majority of Australians are concerned. Now that we face the possibility of an open revolt amongst Australians about the situation they find themselves in, we find that more and more and more are being attracted to political parties like Divided Nations, who are financed by some of the most powerful billionaires in this country. Now, we all know about Gina Rinehart assisting Divided Nation, but there are a number of other billionaires whose names haven't popped up yet who are also assisting Divided Nation. And this is giving Divided Nation the financial ability to conduct more and more successful campaigns which are based on dividing the nation. Because while we turn against each other and what are relatively superficial situations, superficial differences, while we turn on each other and tear each other apart, they're laughing. They're laughing. They continue to brush crumbs off the corporate table which we fight for in order to survive, in order to pay our bills. I'm not talking about starvation. I'm not talking about homelessness. I'm talking about the majority of people who don't find themselves in that situation but have become little more than cogs in a machine, wage slaves. We've even got the ridiculous situation in this country where we have working poor, where you work and you haven't got enough income to actually pay for your fundamentals. Extraordinary situation to find yourself in. So here we are, battling each other once again. And we've got elections coming up in November in Victoria, and there are elections in New South Wales, I think early next year, and there's federal elections in 1.5 years. And the fact is that the rise and rise and rise of the political fortunes have not been in our favour. It's been in the favour of those who want to create social dislocation, want to destroy cohesiveness, want us to tear each other apart so they can continue to rule, govern and maximise their profits. I'll give you a simple example. One home in Toorak, which is in Melbourne, just sold for $138 million. $138 million. And they're going to spend another $40 million on renovations, as you do in those situations. Was it 168 or 174 billionaires in this country? Obviously, they can afford that miserable $138 million. But that's the reality. That's the reality we find ourselves in. It's not good enough fighting underneath the table for the crumbs that are brushed off the corporate tables. It's time we came together, as they did in Nepal and Bangladesh, we came together and we sawed off one of those legs of that four-legged table so that everybody, not just those sitting at the table, can share the bounty of this country. And this is a rich country, an exceptionally rich country in terms of resources, both human and natural. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, I've got a confession to make. No, nobody's offered me a bribe, unfortunately. I'm still waiting for bribes. Anything under $1 million, anything over $1 million, I'll consider. Now, the old age conundrum. Now, those of you who, like me, occasionally watch Legacy TV or listen to AM radio, even FM radio, or even go on the net, there are three things, apart from gambling, which make money. And we're seeing a huge push in that direction. Now, with the privatisation of old age, I mean, that's all superannuation is. It's privatising your old age. You become a self-funded retiree. In other words, a loser who pays for everything. Now, obviously, there are people in society who understand where wealth lies. And ultimately, wealth in this country lies in the pockets of the elderly. Not all of them, but a significant number of them. And it lies in the value of their home, and if they're part of the investment class, in their homes. And it relies on the value in their superannuation, funds. That's, you know, compulsory retirement funds where you fund your own old age, okay? So what we are seeing currently is a huge, disproportionate number of advertisements encouraging elderly Australians to buy into retirement villages or to go into nursing homes or to put their money in these, you know, private funds so they can get 6.75% when you can get 5.25% in the bank currently. And all this goes on and on. That's where the money is. That's where the advertising is. So what's my advice? And I'm elderly these days. What's my advice? Stay out of their clutches as long as you can. Stay out of their clutches. Because once they've got you in their clutches, you will find that your ability to actually function will greatly diminish. Not physical functioning, but the ability to control your finances. Most of these so-called retirement villages, you don't own the title to the land. What you're buying is the house on the land. Not the title. There's no freehold title. And as you move from one section to the next, as you become more physically frail, what you see is that the contracts become longer and longer and longer, and you're paying more and more and more of what's left in your superannuation fund in order to survive. Now, there are mechanisms by which older people can stay at home, especially those who own their own homes. But they're difficult to access. Those old age packages, federal packages, are very difficult to access. So the first thing is try to maintain your health. Once you get on that slippery slope, you may find you're at the behest of somebody else. And we see it. I mean, every second advertisement, retirement village, or somebody offering a service as long as you're covered by the NDIS or, you know, an old age package. That's as long as you're covered, all right? Or the other one I love are the funeral people. They're out there in their thousands advertising simple funerals, complex funerals, funerals in pubs. Well, you don't need them. I went to Denise Hassett's celebration of her life on, I think it was Saturday. Yeah, that's right, Saturday, last Saturday, and hundreds of people were there, a few hundred people were there. It was at the pub. We didn't need anybody, didn't have to pay anybody. So think about it. It's easy to get frightened as you get older because you become more frail, more dependent. And the fact is, these people feed on human frailty. They feed on the fear which is created in society regarding crime going rampant. They feed on the fact that families are dislocated. No wonder we are seeing so much advertising, as I said before, for funerals, retirement homes, retirement villages, they call them, you know, packages, and the list goes on and on. So all I can say is beware of strangers offering you everything for a buck, because as soon as those bucks run out, you'll be pushed out into the public sector and be forced to fend on your own, because these are private contracts you go into, private contracts which are based on generating a profit from human misery. And if there's one thing I'd like to congratulate Mr. John Howard for, one of our former prime ministers, is the fact that he privatised aged care. What a crime against humanity. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. This program, as I said, is podcast. There's tons of podcasts out there. You can go to the 3CR website. You can go to on the World Wide Web. Just type Anarchist World This Week and bingo, it's everywhere. You can actually access the podcast on many, many different avenues, as they say. You can write to us. Yes, I still answer mail, to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. You can email me at anarchistage@yahoo.com. anarchistage@yahoo.com or info@PIBCI. You can join Public Interest Before Corporate Interest online by going to PIBCI.net. YouTube channels, the Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. I do one session every week on a different topic. So go to that YouTube channel, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. And if you're interested in radical Australian history, I suggest you go to the josephtoscano.narm YouTube channel. Don't complain about the noise. We're in a pub. It's an active pub. So, you know, string the words together. But it's worthwhile looking at. And you can always come to the historical, radical history sessions we do at the Footscray Hotel every third Wednesday of the month. So thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Listen in to The Anarchist World This Week, next week, on your local community radio station. If you like what you hear, get your friends to listen to The Anarchist World This Week. And remember, if you don't stand up and you don't fight back and you cognitively surrender, life is not worth living. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of the Community Radio Radio Network. Listen in to this program next week on your favourite community radio station.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.